Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here until midnight. And if you want to jump in, our phone number is 312-981-7200. Continuing to celebrate National Corn Dog Day, we want to thank Jenny Frank for coming down for singing a corn dog song. And we want to thank Gus from Wiener and Steel Champion for bringing some great corn dogs. And Brady, we talked to earlier, the guy who created National Corn Dog Day. And it's still rocking worldwide as the basketball games continue. Our regular features have begun, and we will continue to review the movies. And again, if you want to call us, 312-981-7200. You can send your text to 24720. You can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. Colin is going to join us after 11 o'clock because he's at a wedding right now and is going to join us after the wedding. And he'll be here with us at 11. So Eric is going to join me first, and we are going to talk about the on-demand movies and get that going for you. So we'll do that in a second as soon as I make it official. That's right, man. Movie review time with Eric and Colin. Colin will join us after 11 o'clock, but Eric is with us right now. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm okay.
All right, man. So did you finish all your coverage of the South by Southwest?
Not quite. No, okay. I'm still getting to it. I've been talking about it more than I've been writing about it, unfortunately.
Well, it's a lot of stuff you had to write about it.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. And just, you know, exactly what I want to write about and how I want to write about it. You know, there's so many things that go into it.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, man. We'll get your final thoughts on that coming up. Well, we've got some, as we always do, the on-demand movies.
Yeah.
To talk about. Now, you've only seen one of them. We'll get to that one in a minute. But the first one that's on the list here is, by the way, and you can order movies on demand now, movies that are in theaters, movies that aren't even in theaters yet. This is a pretty new phenomenon. You know, you pay like $9, $9, $10 for a brand new movie that is coming to theaters, but you can see it first in your house if you want. And it's a very popular way to view brand new movies. And so we review all the on demand movies as well, or at least give you a preview of them. And the first one is called Authors Anonymous.
It has one of those posters that doesn't exactly hold promise.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah,
you know, they look like just like, yeah, try our movie.
Yeah,
if you want.
Yeah, it's not a really good poster.
It's not
something that I'd look at and go, oh yeah, man, I can't wait.
Need to see that.
I still think the worst poster I've ever seen, one of the worst posters I've ever seen in my life, where I honestly thought it was a joke, was from a movie last year, The Big Wedding.
Oh, yes.
That is the most... When you had a nice conversation with Sarah Polley about that poster...
We did,
If I remember correctly, you telling me...
One of my favorite moments of everything last year is sharing her live commentary to me about the Big Wedding poster.
Yeah. I mean, it's a remarkable piece of work, that poster.
Yes.
If you have not seen it, the Big Wedding poster, I highly recommend that you go to IMDb. Just go to the Big Wedding IMDb page, and that's a real poster. That's not a joke. That's an actual real movie poster.
A lot of cut and pasting there,
oh,
I think.
Oh, man. Okay, so Authors Anonymous. It's got that Quayle Quo in it.
Yeah, from The Big Bang Theory.
Right.
As the story goes here, when a dysfunctional group of unpublished writers accept Hannah into their fold, the last thing they expect is her overnight success. Can these lovable misfits achieve their artistic dreams and avoid killing one another in the process?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, I mean, the poster doesn't really, you know, that description doesn't do much. The poster certainly doesn't do much. But you look amongst the cast, and amongst them is Dennis Farina.
So is this his last movie?
Probably one of them,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's unfortunate. And Jonathan Banks is also in the – who I am loving so much on Community.
Oh, my God. Right now. He's hilarious. Listen, man, casting David Cross as his son.
Yes.
What an inspired piece of casting that was.
That episode on Thursday was just all kinds of great.
It was fantastic.
Yep.
Now, you know that they're doing a G.I. Joe thing.
No.
Yeah, they're doing an animated version of – they're doing – all the characters are going to be in G.I. Joe.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's I think it's next week or the week after. I'm not sure, but
it's off this week.
So it's the week after that.
I think it's probably the week after.
Yeah. You know, anybody who argues that it's not important for a showrunner to stay with a show,
we have proof.
Need only look at the difference between last season and this season of Community.
That's very true.
It's so good, man, and they're not missing a beat either. You know, I know that Troy's gone.
Yeah.
You know, and what they're doing with Op-Ed now, giving him a girlfriend, I think is a stroke of genius.
Yeah, Brie Larson.
She's awesome, man.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and adding Jonathan Banks, you know, to take the place of the curmudgeonly old guy.
Perfect.
Is absolutely perfect. I love the episode from a couple of weeks ago where Op-Ed comes in and ruins his duck drawings.
Yes. It's hard to get the bill right.
The thing I love the most about that was when Op-Ed is looking at all the different comic strips, and every one of them, the last panel is the duck going, "What the hell?"
Right.
Every punchline, "What the hell?" The duck.
Oh, we could talk Community all night.
I know,
Season
5 great.
It's one of the best things on television.
It's
right
awesome,
now.
Man. It's just awesome. All right, so there's a lot of people in this cast, including. Chris Klein, who I hope is repeating his fantastic performance. What the hell was that movie?
Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
That's it, man.
Yeah, as Nash.
One of the greatest performances in the history of cinema.
Nash out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, so we've not seen Authors Anonymous. Doesn't look very good, though.
No.
All right. Well, now, the next one you did see, Blood Ties. Tell me about Blood Ties.
Yeah, I saw this one. It's Toronto, and it's another really, really great cast. Clive Owen, Billy Crudup, Marion Cotillard, Mila Kunis, Zoe Saldana, James Caan, Lily Taylor. I mean, it's a really loaded cast. And it's it's kind of sort of a typical kind of gangster story. Clive Owen plays the bad brother who is in prison. He gets released. Billy Crudup is his brother who became a cop. It's about the whether or not he's going to return to the life of crime, if he can go straight in this horrible world. I think it's set in the 70s, if I recall correctly. Yeah, it is set in the 70s. In this cruel world, can he maintain it? Of course he can't. So he goes back into his life of crime while Crudup, his brother, the cop, is on his tail and that kind of stuff. It really, the way the movie plays out, it's really like a very low-rent version of Carlito's Way, right down to a final chase through Grand Central Station.
Wow, really?
Yeah, not quite with the same panache that De Palma did it. But it does, it's very, very familiar when you see how this thing plays out. It's really not a very good film at all. It's very familiar. Billy Crudup is not very good. His character is very poorly written. A lot of relationships just don't make a whole lot of sense. Marion Cotillard just kind of drifts in and out of the film. It was co-written by James Gray, who's done some interesting work in the past. But no, this is not a very good movie.
I'm starting to feel bad for Clive Owen because I love that guy.
Well, have you even seen like the previews on like HBO that he's got this show that like Soderbergh produced or something coming out?
Oh, what's it called?
The Nick?
The Nick?
The Nick or something like that. Yeah, okay. I mean, they've only been like you only see like stills of Clive Owen, and it looks like he's wearing like a lab coat or a dentist coat or something like that.
Oh, okay. All right.
And he's got like blood spurts all over him.
Okay, well, I'm in.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm in. No, I love Clive Owen, man. I think he's great.
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of HBO, are you watching Dahl and M?
No, I haven't started that. I actually just watched Ghetto Clown tonight.
No, I have not seen that.
You should check that out.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I will. But you should watch Dahl and M.
Okay.
Emily Mortimer has basically become the female Ricky Gervais in this show.
Sold.
Yeah. It's great. It's
I love
really,
her, and that's I'm in.
It's great, and I think it's got the same sort of spirit as a Gervais show. It really does, and it's pretty terrific.
And the name of the Clive Owen show is The Nick.
It is The Nick.
And it looks like it's going to be like a miniseries. It looks like it might be like a True Detective type thing.
All right. Well, that's I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, and it's Nick with a K.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
it's the New York's Knickerbocker Hospital.
Yes.
That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. All right, well, there's something to look forward to if you're a Clive Owen fan. All right, we'll take a quick break. We got a couple of more on-demand movies to talk about, and then after the 11 o'clock news, Colin will join us for all the theatrical movies that are in theaters. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Send us a text to 24720, and we shall return with more movie reviews on WGN. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios right here on Michigan Avenue. I just heard from Colin. Colin is actually closer to the radio station than he is to home. So we're going to have him just come into the studio. So he should be here after the 11 o'clock news live in studio. And we are reviewing movies. It's 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
All right, man. So Colin's going to be in studio.
Very cool.
Yeah, man. All right. So let's move on to the next movie, and it's called The French Minister.
Yeah, and there's a very long plot description here. I'll shorten it up for us. Alexandra Teilhard de Vormes is tall and impressive, a man with style, attractive to women. He also happens to be the Minister of Foreign Affairs for the Land of Enlightenment, France. With his silver mane and tanned athletic body, he stalks the world stage from the floor of the United Nations in New York to the powder keg of Ubanga. There he calls on the powerful and invokes the mighty to bring peace, to calm the trigger-happy, and to cement his aura of Nobel Peace Prize winner in waiting.
Yeah.
But he also has to learn to deal with the sensibilities of the boss and his entourage and find his way between the private secretary and the special advisors who stalk the corridors, the ministry's home, where stress, ambition, and dirty dealing are the daily currency. But just as he thinks he can influence the fate of the world, everything seems threatened by the inertia of the technocrats.
Wow, man.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm no closer to knowing what that movie's about.
Right. I was just going to say, I have no idea what any of that meant.
No, me neither.
The French Minister.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know what to make of it. I don't know who's in it.
No.
Wait a minute. Is the director? The director did.
Oh, Bertrand.
Oh my God! He did Round Midnight.
Round Midnight.
Holy cow, man!
Yeah.
Wow. Well, he's a good director.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff since Round Midnight.
Yeah, he has. I don't know where it's been, but wow. All right. Okay. All right. Well, there's that. If you want to see The French Minister, that's quite a mouthful. Though.
From the director of Round Midnight.
From the director of Round Midnight. That should just be, that's all it should say.
Right, exactly.
You don't need to write a 75-paragraph description if you just go, it's from the guy who directed Round Midnight.
I certainly buried the lead on that one.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Okay. Nymphomaniac Volume 2.
Yeah, I don't know if we really need a description of this. I understand you guys reviewed Volume 1 a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I actually went to watch Volume 1 tonight, but my link had expired. So thanks, Magnolia.
Your link had expired?
Yeah. That's not a euphemism. That's actually what they sent me to watch, and I went to watch it, and they said I couldn't watch it anymore. So
it's on demand.
It's on demand.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't feel like paying for it, though.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, I'll catch up with it, but this is Volume 2 for those who've been waiting. It's the second chapter of Lars von Trier's four-hour film. What do you guys think of the first
one? I didn't see it. I still haven't. Colin liked it.
Yeah, I heard good things.
He liked it, but he said that it's hard to sort of judge it considering it's just half a movie.
Right.
And he has no idea what is in store for Volume 2. Now, I don't know if he's seen it, and I'll ask him when he gets here.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've seen the Volume 2 yet, but Volume 1 opened in theaters today.
Volume 1 opened in theaters today. Volume 2 hit on demand this week and will be in theaters in a couple weeks.
Yeah. The prospect of a four-hour Lars von Trier movie is not high on my priority
list.
It's
daunting. Yeah.
It is, man.
Especially when you're going to see parts of Shia LaBeouf you'd never seen before.
I don't really care about that. And,
no.
Yeah. Uma Thurman was on Craig's show.
Yeah.
And she was quite delightful.
I hear that, she's apparently only got like one scene in the first one.
Yeah.
And apparently it's worth seeing the movie just for that.
I've heard that she basically kind of has the best moments in the movie.
Yes.
And so, I don't know. Anyway, it's hard for me to even get myself going for that.
I know.
All right, two more. Stay. Now, this has nothing to do with that movie that came out like 7 years ago.
With McGregor and Gosling?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
And I like that movie. I remember I'm the only person in the world that liked that movie.
You did like that movie?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you'll like this one then. It stars Aidan Quinn and Taylor Schilling from Orange is the New Black from Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman finds out she's pregnant and returns home when the expected father wants nothing to do with her.
Well, that's nice.
So, comedy, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, hey, man, Michael Ironside is in it.
He is.
What the hell, man? Now it's I got to watch it.
Billing.
Michael Ironside, man. I wonder if he's going to pull out the kegs of beer and the and the violin so that they can rock out.
Make it 20 minutes.
Yeah. It's like six people just got that reference right now.
Have fun.
And they're Starship Trooper fans. Anyway.
Footballs
all right,
and violins.
So football, that's right. Footballs and violins. That's right. That movie rules, man.
Yep.
All right, stay. I like Aidan Quinn.
Sure.
Good guy.
Chicago Zone.
All right. Now, this next one, I saw the trailer for this.
Yeah?
And it's You Want Me to Kill Him?
You Want Me to Kill Him.
All one word.
All one word.
With basically. The U. It's kind of like, it's like text speak.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. A teenage boy's descent into the dangerous world of the internet and the harrowing consequences of his actions, a true story.
True story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I saw the trailer for it. Looks kind of weird.
Okay.
And can I ask a question about what's going on with all these internet things, internet-like horror movies?
Like this?
That's like every week we've had one, every the past 3 weeks.
There was the one in the Den, and then there's one from South by Southwest.
Oh, that's right.
Open Windows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I guess it's, Open Windows at least really does some interesting things with it and, like, trying to do sort of like a single take.
Yeah.
On the internet, which I think it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But like the Den, it's a lot of stop and start. Like,
right.
We're gonna turn on the webcam, turn it off, and next scene starts.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And then You Want Me to Kill Him.
Like a horror movie?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a thriller.
Thriller. Okay.
Yeah. Thriller thing. So. All right. Well, there's your on-demand stuff.
Yeah.
Here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break, and I believe Colin is going to be joining us live in studio. Eric, you hang on.
All right.
All right, Eric Childress is with us. We'll finish up the movie reviews, starting with all the movies that are in theaters, coming up right after the news, which is next on WGN. Yeah. Movie reviews continue here live in the Allstate Showcase Studios on the first floor of studio here in Michigan Avenue. We're here till midnight, and if you want to jump in with your movie stuff, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We covered all of the on-demand movies for you, and some are interesting, some are not, and now we've got some movies to talk about in the theaters. Eric is on the phone. Colin is actually now. Eric, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
And Colin is actually in the studio. Hi, Colin.
Hi there.
That worked out pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's going on, man? How was the wedding?
It was nice. Yeah. It was nice. The food was really good. That's how I judge all the weddings.
Yeah.
Is the food good? If the food is good, it's a good wedding. If the food is good and I get cake, it's a great wedding.
Oh, so, wow.
You know.
No, there you go.
Right.
All right. So you're back fresh from the...
From the shoot. Yeah.
And we were talking about, before you got in here, we were talking about Nymphomaniac Volume 2, which is now on demand. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, okay. Now, you did like Volume 1.
Yeah,
to the extent that it's half a movie.
Yeah, I like where this movie is going so far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I do plan on seeing Volume 2 maybe tomorrow or Monday night. And, you know, then I'll have a full... you know, review of what this movie really is,
right?
And if it really is worth 4 hours of your time.
Okay.
You know.
All right. Well, Volume 1, by the way, is available, and Volume 2 are both now available on demand.
Yeah.
And Volume 1 opened up in where is it playing?
Landmark Century.
That's it.
I believe. I don't have that in front of me, but
yeah.
I know that place, that's the theater that is showing it. I think it carries an NC-17 rating or an unrating.
It's unrated. Yeah.
Whatever the NC-17 equivalent of that is. So not a lot of theaters can play that kind of a movie, but I know the Landmark Century usually does. So.
Okay. All right. All right. Now we got some movies to talk about here. I have not, as I was telling Colin off the air, Eric,
mm-hmm.
I have not seen Enemy, nor have I seen Divergent. Why don't we start, Colin, why don't you tell us about Enemy?
All right, well, this stars Jake Gyllenhaal as a guy named Adam who...
And by the way, I was just talking about this with you off the air.
Yeah.
Did they shoot this, like, right 2 seconds after they finished Prisoners?
It sure seems like
it. I mean,
it was shot before, actually.
It was shot before Prisoners?
Yeah.
Really?
So it's been mm-hmm. sitting on a shelf?
Well, it played Toronto. It premiered Toronto sort of as Prisoners did last year.
Yeah.
But no, I think he probably started Prisoners not like right after doing this one.
Okay, same director and Jake Gyllenhaal's in both.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm really curious about this movie considering how much I like Prisoners. Okay, so tell us about Enemy.
Okay, so Jake Gyllenhaal plays a guy named Adam who he gets a movie recommendation from a coworker. So he rents this movie. It's a fake movie. And he sees somebody in it that looks just like himself, and he realizes he has an exact doppelganger. And this guy in the movie, he's a small part, like a one-liner, bellhop character. So Adam proceeds to try and find this guy who just happens to live in his area as well. And they both have live-in girlfriends, and both of them sort of react skeptically to this idea that each one of them has a doppelganger because Adam... pursues this guy who's like a D-list actor, and he can only get bits parts in films, and he's also kind of a jerk, and he can't understand why this guy who looks like him is following him around, until he decides to investigate this guy's life and finds that he's got some pretty good things going for him, most namely like a hot girlfriend who isn't pregnant, so he thinks maybe we can swap places or something like that. And complications ensue from there. Now, when I say complications ensue, I'm not just talking about the characters. I'm talking about the audience as well. This is one of those movies that almost requires a decoder ring. It is designed to keep you guessing throughout the whole thing. It's designed to sort of play with your head. But by the end, you have no idea what just happened. You have no idea what you're supposed to make of this movie in one viewing when it's over. You have to see it twice. And even as a second time, I'm not sure I would really know. I've only seen it once, but I'm very interested in seeing it a second time. It is a puzzle that you kind of have to put together. And, saying it ends on an ambiguous note is putting it mildly. It is one of the strangest endings I've ever seen. It is very much like, it reminds me of a Cronenberg film.
Well, he'd made a movie called Dead Ringers.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
So
yeah. So
which is my favorite Cronenberg movie.
Mine too.
Yeah.
And this is definitely along those lines, but with very much a surreal bent to it. It's a hard movie to recommend. It's going to annoy a lot of people. but I liked it. I liked it, even though I don't get it. I liked it. I think Gyllenhaal is great in it. It's a dual role. and I liked that it kept me guessing. I liked that I thought I knew where it was going, I thought, oh my God, if this is, if the ending is what I think it's going to be, I'm going to be really disappointed. And I was not disappointed. And the stylistic flourishes with which this director, you know, uses to direct his films. I'm always interested and intrigued by this guy. You know, I think Incendies is a great film. I think Prisoners is a good film, and this is, I don't know what this is yet, but I'm very intrigued by it.
Okay. I liked Indices a lot and I loved Prisoners. So yeah. I'm really looking forward to this. All right, Eric, what'd you think?
It's a very easy film for me not to recommend. It's probably not a surprise. I'm not a biggest fan of the kind of style. Where, to me, it felt a lot like sort of someone's interpretation of not just a Cronenberg film, but of a David Lynch film, but someone who didn't quite, you know, wasn't going to go quite all the way with a lot of the David Lynch craziness and, you know, non sequiturs and stuff like that in the plotting. But, you know, at some point, it's just like, you know, at least with Dead Ringers, you know, Jeremy Irons played two, you know, fascinating characters. Jake Gyllenhaal, the way these characters are written, neither of them are fascinating. One of them sort of intentionally so, but, you know, neither of them get, you know, even the slightest bit more interesting as the film goes on. Like Colin says, the ending is very ambiguous or ambivalent. You know, it is putting it mildly. Let's just say that this is a film that, you know, wears its sort of spider motif right on its sleeve. Sort of the most obvious, you know, bit of sort of arachnid imagery since the gag and High Anxiety. I found myself, you know, very bored and, you know, checking my watch during this film, not really interested where it was going. It wouldn't have been satisfying either which way. I don't care that it doesn't really have a conclusion. I was just sort of annoyed with it, and I can't recommend it.
Okay. All right. that's Enemy, which is playing at the Music Box, which is only playing at the Music Box. And that's not on demand, is it?
No.
No.
No. Oh, so it's just at the Music Box if you are interested in seeing it. Well, you know, I mean, did you expect Prisoners to end where it ended? You saw that coming, right?
Yeah. I liked the way Prisoners ended.
I thought Prisoners had a magnificent ending. Quite frankly,
I mean, I like the way a lot of the scenes end in Prisoners. I like where this guy decides to cut, and you know, he just shows you just enough to give you an idea of what's going to happen next.
Yeah,
without lingering or exploiting too much. This movie, you're going to wish he showed more. You know, I disagree. I think it does go all the way with the Lynchian stuff, especially in the last shot. I mean, that is a Lynchian moment at the end. But,
okay. All right. I'm intrigued now. I was intrigued even before you guys reviewed it, but I'm still even more intrigued now. You know, the thing about Dead Ringers, which, and if people have not seen Dead Ringers, I mean, this is just one of my favorite movies of all time. And with incredible two incredible performances by Jeremy Irons. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys remember when he won for Reversal of Fortune.
Yeah.
When he won the Oscar for Reversal of Fortune. You guys remember who the first guy he thanked was?
Cronenberg.
Yeah. I'm sure Barbet Schroeder was like, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
But if you see that movie, the remarkable thing about Jeremy Irons in that movie is that there is not one moment in that movie where you do not know which character it is.
Yeah.
There is not one moment, even when they're trying to trick the other, you know, even when they're trying to trick like Jean-Pierre Bujold, or they're switching play, you know, even when they're trying to act like Beverly's trying to act like Ellie, it's an incredible performance. And, you know, at a time when that was like, you know, that technology where you can have the actor in the same shot was kind of new at that point. And it's flawless. And it's a brilliant movie, and it's not a good first date movie.
No, it's not.
I made that mistake.
That's right.
But of course I went in because I'd seen the movie already.
Yeah.
I took this girl on a first date to see Dead Ringers. I'd already seen it. It was a test and I'm a jerk. So, all right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, you guys can tell me all about Divergent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Virgins.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a lot to say.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. All right. Hang on a second. Eric is on the phone. Colin is in studio, and it's movie review time right here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and we are movie review time here. Colin is in studio with me. Hi, Colin.
Hello.
And Eric is on the phone. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right, Eric, tell us about Divergent.
Okay. Divergent is a film story set sometime in the future where a great war has happened, and it has wiped out the rivers and apparently most of the suburbs as well, at least in the city of Chicago, where this film is set. So the survivors remain within the city limits. There's a great wall has blocked out the landscape out there, where apparently there's some evil or something lurking out there. And in this, within the city limits, all the people are divided into five factions. There's a faction for the smart people. There's a faction for the charitable who run the government. And then you have the people who enforce the laws, known as the Dauntless. The way that you are chosen for one of these factions is by taking an aptitude test when you're 16. And you're put under, and they acknowledge your dreams and your fears and stuff. And when they find out who you belong to, then you have a choice. You can stay with the faction you were born into, or you can basically swap teams as a free agent. So the story revolves around the 16-year-old Beatrice, played by Shailene Woodley, who takes her aptitude test and is whisked away from it and is told that she is divergent, which means that she doesn't quite fit perfectly into any one particular faction. She could fit into, three of them if she wants to. And apparently that's a bad thing because, as we know in science fiction, free thinkers are people who don't subscribe to the general status quo are the enemy, that they are a threat to society. Well, that'd be a good place for the film to start, but the film then takes a detour as she decides to choose one of those three factions, and she chooses the Dauntless. And the Dauntless are, while they're the law enforcers, they basically belong out of, either a Step Up movie or West Side Story in their training. And we're subjected to about a 90-minute midsection where it's just a lot of training and examining fears and just figuring out how to
hide. Sounds exactly like Ender's Game.
Yeah.
It's exactly like Ender's Game, except it's worse.
Wow.
Yes, it is so much worse than Ender's Game, and Ender's Game was bad.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yes, okay, because the thing with Ender's Game is, at least we were aware of precisely what the threat was. We know that, even though the training sequence goes on forever, we know what they're training for, why they're training for it, and, some of the things that went along with the training. And this one, the training sequence, is this gigantic distraction, so much to the point that we even forget that there's any divergence involved in the Beatrice character, who renames herself Triss. There's very little threat in the movie until it's decided that the big threat in the movie are the smart people who like science, which is, take that for what you will. Until we get to the third act of the film, when an actual threat takes up, and Triss's divergence is going to be a threat, and she's being hunted down, and all these things going on. This is a monumentally stupid movie that challenges the Twilight series for just how idiotic it is. And even with Twilight, that's a film that, it knew what it was. It was a cheesy romance with, there were good vampires, bad vampires. It was stupid as all hell, but at least you could understand what was going on for its 2 hours. With this film and this story thinks it is so, the complications that it thinks it's that are inherent in the story, and it just sits there, and really the pretentiousness involved in thinking that there's so much going on in this film and this story when there's not, because all we're really witnessing is Veronica Roth, who wrote this story back in 2011 when it was published, has clearly just lapped up every piece of science fiction and young adult literature and film and television show that she's come across in all of her years. And we're talking from The Hunger Games to Starship Troopers to Solar Babies. Everything in this movie is just, it's a mashup of garbage. And it is so stupid. It runs for 2 hours and 20 minutes. I was restless almost immediately with this film because I can't imagine, Chicagoans who, have any, knowledge of the way things used to be would even submit to an aptitude test to tell them exactly what faction they belong to. Oh, I guess I'll be in the homeless group. Okay. Yeah, no, this is one of the worst, very worst films of the year.
Okay. Colin.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to go so far as to give credit to any Twilight movie, but it is definitely one of the worst films of the year, as bad as Ender's Game, because Ender's Game is pretty terrible. And this movie, I mean, Eric's right. It just sits there. It's like one test after another, and every, you know, it's one of those movies where every test ends with a, well, that was good, but not good enough, you know. This is a test to see if you can control your fear. You know, that sort of thing. And it goes on like that for a good 90 minutes where nothing happens and there's no and you know, and I feel bad because I love Shailene Woodley.
Sure, man.
I mean, I want her to do well. And you know, this is supposed to be kind of a breakout role for her, in a sense, you know, big mainstream breakout role for her. And it sucks. And she deserves better. You know, hopefully it'll bomb and she won't do anymore and she'll get back to doing indie stuff, you know, like Spectacular Now.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie is just, it's one of those, what I like about the Hunger Games is that not everybody in it is impossibly good looking. Whereas in this movie, like somehow in this dystopian future, everybody has time to go out and get a tan. You know, everybody just looks, you know, like pristine and hot and muscled up and everything like that. And it's just like one of those things that, you know, if I'm thinking about that when I'm watching a movie like this, then that means the story sucks and it's not involving at all.
Right.
Because I can be very forgiving when it comes to science fiction and logic and improbabilities. But this is the kind of movie where you just sit there questioning everything because there's nothing else to latch on to to keep you going through it. Yeah, it's just a mess.
Okay, not a good pair of reviews for Divergent.
Yep. Sorry, Chicago.
All right.
Sorry.
Everybody hang on. Eric, hang on. Colin, hang out here. We'll take a quick break. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we will tell you about the new Muppets movie and Jason Bateman's new movie, Bad Words. All coming up right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiCilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue. We're here till midnight. The lovely Amy Guth will be in for Red Eye Remix at 12 o'clock. And we are wrapping things up here with our last two movie reviews for this week. Of course, we'll be back next week reviewing all the new movies as well. Eric is on the phone. Colin is in the studio. Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Colin, why don't you tell us about Muppets Most Wanted?
All right. Well, this movie picks up right exactly where the last the Muppets left off, right at that musical number that took place in the street. This is where that movie picks up. And now the Muppets are, you know, saying, hey, we're all back together and, you know, let's do a sequel. And there's a musical number, you know, and about sequels. And, you know, now all we need is a happy subplot. Cut to a Siberian gulag where a Kermit the Frog sort of look-alike named Constantine is in prison and is breaking out of prison. The thing that separates him from Kermit the Frog, though, is a little mole on his nose. So he gets out of prison. Meanwhile, the Muppets are under new management, played by Ricky Gervais as Dominic Bad Guy, or Badgie, as he'd like to be called. And he's going to book them on a world tour, or at least a European tour. But he's working with Constantine to basically, this is an elaborate plan to conduct this jewel heist. So it's basically, it's a heist movie. So Constantine and Kermit the Frog, they sort of switch places. Kermit gets sent to the Siberian gulag, which is run by Tina Fey. And Constantine is pretending to be Kermit the Frog and trying to pass off this ridiculous accent as Kermit with a cold. And everybody buys into it that it's Kermit. And meanwhile, also, Ty Burrell and Sam the Eagle are working together as CIA operatives to try and foil this heist and try to track down Constantine and Dominic and all that stuff. So you might think, well, this is a sequel to a reboot. And much like the sequel to the Muppet movie, The Great Muppet Caper, it wasn't very good. Except this one, while it is inferior to the Muppets, the movie that came out a couple years ago, it is, I think, still very funny and better than Great Muppet Caper. I think the whole Constantine stuff is hilarious. I just think the idea that a big chunk of a Muppet movie takes place in a Siberian gulag, that's funny to me. And I get a lot of pleasure out of that. And I think all the scenes that take place in there with a lot of the cameos, which I won't give away, I think are very funny. I think the movie kind of slogs a little bit with the whole Ty Burrell, Sam the Eagle thing. I don't find that part of the film particularly funny, but I think all the other stuff when they're in Spain, when they're in Germany, all the other stuff, I think it's just a really funny movie. It doesn't rank up with the Muppet movie or the Muppets, but I think it's a close third or fourth on the list. If you're going to rank the Muppet movies, I think this ranks around three or four, and I think worth seeing.
Okay, Eric?
Yeah, I agree with Colin. We were laughing pretty hard together throughout this movie, and there's clearly there's some worry that Jason Segel, who's basically did the Muppets as a real passion project a few years ago, that him not being involved, that this would somehow really be sort of an inferior work. But if Jason Segel was sort of responsible for that that extra sort of kick of heart and nostalgia that we all felt a few years ago, if that's absent, it still has the same director, and Nicholas Stoller is still a co-writer, and Brett McKenzie is still doing the songs. And the songs, to me, many of them are a lot of fun. The human cast is certainly got a great upgrade with Tina Fey and Ricky Gervais, and there are some wonderful, hilarious cameos in the Russian Gulag. I think a lot of this enjoyment of this movie is just how much you enjoy the Constantine character and him riffing on basically doing his own Kermit impression. I like all the stuff that's going on in the Gulag. I like the idea of them trying to put on, sort of reboot their own Muppet show, sort of somewhat of a commentary on the sequels as well. This is a movie that comes down to just how much one laughs at the situations. It's a bit long for a Muppet movie. It does run nearly 2 hours. But I've seen, a lot of comedies and a lot of films that are much shorter that felt much longer. So I don't really have a problem with the length. I laughed pretty consistently throughout this film, and I am recommending it.
We're going to part ways on this one. I was very disappointed with it. There are to be sure, there are some really big laughs in this movie, and there are some fantastic cameos. But I'm glad you brought up the Great Muppet Caper. That's exactly what I thought this was. Mm-hmm. It was like the follow up to the Muppet movie was the Great Muppet Caper, it just didn't have this for me. I couldn't latch onto it emotionally at all. It's rapid fire. It's jokes. It's fine. It's funny. I wasn't crazy about the Constantine character, the songs were fine. They weren't as memorable as the songs in the first movie, in the first reboot. Muppet or a Man is still, I think, the pinnacle of the of the songs out of these two movies. It didn't do it for me. A lot of great people in it, and people have moments. There are, and I'm not going to say I didn't laugh because I did. There's a moment with Ray Liotta and Danny Trejo in this movie that I almost fell off the chair laughing. And the characters are there. It's just it didn't the Muppets, the reboot from 2011, and I guess maybe it has to do with Jason Segel. I don't know, but there was a lot of heart in that movie, and I cared. I latched onto it emotionally, and I think there's a lack of of human leads in this movie. Like in the first, you know, in the original, in the last one, you had Amy Adams and you had Jason Segel, and their story was just as compelling. And they were like the human emotional connection to the audience. And they don't have that in this movie. You know, the human characters are all completely over the top. And either bad guy, good guy, or played for laughs, or cameo. And there's no emotional connection between the humans and the Muppets in this movie. Like, it was so strong in the 2011 movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I sort of think that, you know, this is, you know, one thing, one symptom of sequelitis is that, okay, we got all the establishing the characters and everything out of the way in the first film. Now we can just have fun.
Right.
And that's what this is doing.
Sure.
And for me, it is fun. I mean, I don't disagree with you about the human element of this movie, but like Eric said, I think it just comes down to how much you laugh.
Sure.
And I think that's what the Muppets are really that's what all they're going for with this.
Oh, and in theory, I agree with Eric and I agree with you, but how much you laugh. I didn't laugh that much. I mean, I did. I laughed hard at times, but it just didn't do it for me. I guess it's hard to always compare the two movies, but it's like comparing, for me, it was like when I saw The Great Muppet Caper, I was like, oh man, you know, I think this is better than The Great Muppet Caper. I will say that. But I felt the same disappointment after, because the Muppet movie is a spectacular film.
Yeah.
It's
just
a beautiful, beautiful movie. And, you know, I mean, it ain't easy being green and all that stuff it was just beautiful. And then to have some wacky sort of caper thing.
It is an odd choice that they would follow up
a caper movie with a caper movie. I know. But I mean, but you know, like what was after
the Muppets Take Manhattan,
which is great. Which is great.
So now,
so hopefully the third one will be if they're going to follow in the footsteps, because Muppets Take Manhattan is awesome.
Yeah,
I saw that movie in the summer of 1984 like 900 times.
And there's a nod to that movie in this movie.
Yes, yes,
which
is
nice.
Yes. All right. Well, anyway, I don't dislike it, and I'm not telling people to not see it, obviously, because it's the Muppets, and I'm sure that people will get a kick out of it. I was just, after such a strong return with the Muppets, I felt this was just kind of a weak follow-up. Yeah. So, all right, we'll take a quick break. Eric, hang on. Colin, hang out. And when we come back, we'll talk about Jason Bateman's new movie, Bad Words, coming up here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios, and we are here till midnight and finishing up the movie reviews for this week. Colin is in studio with me. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric is on the phone. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right. Eric, tell us about Bad Words.
Okay. Well, this is Jason Bateman's directorial debut, although he also stars in the film, and he stars as Guy Trilby, a 40-year-old man who is going around the country entering children's spelling bees and is determined to win them all until he gets to the grand prize and takes down the spelling bee. He's being followed around by a female reporter played by Catherine Hahn. And she's sort of documenting this trip as he's found this loophole that allows him to be a part of the spelling bees. Meanwhile, the people involved with the spelling bees are trying to oust them themselves and trying to find out exactly what his hidden motivation for doing this is. And along the way, as he gets to the final round, he's befriended by a young fellow contestant who is very, very spirited, very friendly, but the guy wants nothing to do with him. he's a big curmudgeon. He's got his own agenda and he wants no part of this. But the two of them do kind of strike up a bit of a friendship as he just, you know, sees that the boy is, you know, of the homeschooled clan that is basically just, you know, devoted his life to learning words and not really having any fun.
So he takes him on some adult fun excursions. So you have a really dark comedy where Jason Bateman is basically going around swearing at young children and saying very inappropriate things to them for an hour and a half. And because it's Jason Bateman, we're completely okay with that. Jason Bateman, he has such a likable presence that even when he's saying horrible things, we sort of instantly forgive him, because deep down inside all of us, we probably are thinking a few of the things that he's saying out loud. For the first two-thirds of this movie, I laughed pretty hard, really hard, in fact. It is kind of a one-joke movie in a way, but the way Bateman and, Catherine Hahn gets in on it too, finds a way to, expand upon that one joke, is a pretty neat little trick. And my biggest complaint with the film is the third act of the film, which I feel doesn't quite live up to the expectations of what the sort of the hidden motivation is behind the thing. If Enemy didn't really have any explanation, this one has a very simplistic, very predictable sort of explanation. A bit of a connection to Magnolia there, as a matter of fact. But the first two-thirds of this movie are incredibly funny, and I had a good time seeing Bad Words. I recommend it.
All right. Colin?
Yeah, I mean, I'm struggling with this one. I did laugh, and, that's definitely – it is worth seeing just for the laugh quotient of this film. Afterwards, when I started thinking about it, just kind of started to bug me, mainly the stuff with Catherine Hahn. I think it's a really poorly written character, and it's just kind of the thing, like Eric said, Bateman's character is unlikable, yet we like him. And yet I couldn't think of a reason why this woman would throw herself at him. I think women get really shortchanged in this film. I don't think women will enjoy this movie as much as men will. And just like Eric said, the third act is a little cheap. It's not really drawn out. It's not really fleshed out enough, to make it really work. That being said, though, it is a funny movie. It is a movie that fits Jason Bateman to a T. And it's an interesting start to a directorial, career. And I know he's going to be directing again. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I just kind of wish the screenplay was a little bit better. But it is a funny movie, and all the stuff with the kid, his relationship with the kid, I thought was fantastic. And that makes it worth seeing. But there's a lot of other things that kind of bug me about it.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I'll tell you what, everything that was wrong with Bad Santa in that regard is right in this movie, especially the dealing with the kid, the relationship between him and the kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bad Santa, that failed. Are we the only three people on the planet that didn't like Bad Santa?
I think so.
Sure. Apparently.
Like it.
Yeah. I mean, I hate that movie.
Yeah.
And
terrible.
And I think it's mean-spirited and not funny, and the relationship between him and the kid, didn't buy it, didn't care, bought all of it in this movie. Yeah. Bought all of it. I agree with you. The third act is kind of it's kind of a letdown a little bit. But I laughed so hard during this. I don't know if I've laughed harder at a movie all year so far than this one. I mean, I just love Jason Bateman. I love that he has this. Well, now it's not a comeback. Now he's been back now for 10 years.
Yeah.
But like the second half of his career, starting with Arrested Development. I remember the first time where I was like, hey, Arrested Development had just started, and then I hate Dodgeball, but what he did in Dodgeball was, I was like, okay, this guy is hilarious, and he's only in I think he's the best part. Who was with him?
Gary Cole.
Oh, Gary Cole. That's right. Those two guys were awesome in that movie, and so I just love Jason Bateman. I think he made a smart decision having this be his first film as a director. It suits him to a T. You know what I mean? It's exactly the kind of character that he should play. He directed it well, I think, and he cast it unbelievable. There were some great people in this movie, including Allison Janney and my main man Philip Baker Hall is in this. You already mentioned Catherine Hahn, and the kid is terrific. So I'm recommending it, man. I thought it was very, very funny. And again, it's vulgar. Know that going in. There's tons of inappropriate stuff being done and said in front of kids. No, but I think you probably know that already. But I thought it was great. And I have to tell you, it's one of my favorite movie posters of the year.
Yeah, it's great. I'm looking at it right now.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just, you know, have you seen the poster, Eric?
It's just his mouth, right?
It's his mouth, but he's about to say the F word.
Right.
I mean, that's what's going to come out of his mouth. I think it's just his nose, from his nose to his chin, and he's about to say, and it's, I love that poster. That's like one of my favorite movie posters of the year. So
yep.
I'm highly recommending it. I thought it was great. I thought it was really funny. Next week we have, inexplicably, I'm really looking forward to an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that opens next week.
And let it be noted, I want to get this on the record, that let it be noted that Sabotage, the Schwarzenegger movie in question, is being screened for critics. The Darren Aronofsky biblical epic Noah is not.
That says a lot.
You know, I mean, Paramount running scared on this film. They're completely kowtowing to people who think it's not going to be faithful to the original text.
Yeah.
And so they're running scared, and they're only showing, you know, critics and, you know, certain critics in certain areas, religious leaders.
Right.
It's a Darren Aronofsky movie, for God's sake.
I know.
Well, what's the budget on this thing?
Well, it varies from 125 to 160 million.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, we'll find out next week. It's going
to
be a big release. All right, Eric. Thanks, man.
Sounds good.
All right, Colin. Thank you, buddy.
All righty.
All right, and we'll do it all again next week.